for feeding, nesting, and roosting through the seasons. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
You're tuned in to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Broadcasting from a patchouli oil-scented inner room stocked with chilled, tannin-free white wine. Salade Niçoise. And room temperature tofu pate on the top floor of a carbon-neutral ivory tower above San Francisco Bay.
Fabulous!
Adjacent to a raging bonfire of Bibles, bras, and the Declaration of Independence, right down the street from the nation's first regional gun confiscation headquarters.
From my cold, dead hands.
And, in accordance with a soon-to-be declassified presidential directive requiring each citizen to listen to at least 1 hour of Fairness Doctrine-approved anti-American radio.
Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
And I'm proud to be an American where at least I know I'm free.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Berg.
Well, good afternoon. I am Mike Honig.
And I am Egberto Willis. And
we are Jeff Berg. Yeah, apparently when Jeff Berg is out, it takes two brains to replace him. So I'm both flattered and offended.
I don't think you should be offended.
I'm only half a brain compared to Jeff Berg.
Well, that's okay. Come on. Look at the time Jeff Berg is on at 3 o'clock. And folks, before we even get started, please remember this is a call-in show, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And if this were my show, Politics Done Right, at 9 o'clock on Mondays, Roxy would have said it this way.
Jam, 713-JAM, KPFT.
And if this were my show on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock Think Wing Radio, I would be fully awake.
Actually, Mike, if this were your show on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock, all of Houston would be awake.
Well, I don't know about that.
But, yeah.
I'll tell you this. I would have prepared contemporaneous notes up the wazoo, which is something that because I already did a Wednesday night show, now I'm kind of improvising.
But that looks like notes up the wazoo, Mike.
Those are the wazoo notes, but those are only stimulants because I'm going to be picking and choosing and kind of going from there.
Folks, I work with Mike on Wednesdays, and I tell you, it's fun because this guy has his act together. Well, most of the times, at least.
Most of the time, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I sometimes bring in like a quarter inch of paper that I can shuffle through and lose my place.
And it drives me crazy.
Well, you are just so steeped in information. You are constantly blogging and meeting and politicaling.
But you do that in your own way, buddy.
In my own way.
Thank you. I read your stuff, you know.
We just do different things.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyhow, this is going to be a great show. Isn't it going to be a great show, Mike?
It's going to be great fun.
And what are we going to start with today?
Well, I like to do my voter nag.
I love that.
Yeah,
let's
the voter nag. Let's see. The voter nag, first of all, there was something that I ran across a couple of days ago. I mentioned this on my show. It is a quote from John F. Kennedy. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. People who want to suppress the vote for their own short-sighted political purposes should recognize that historically, that doesn't work in the long term. If people can't vote to change their government, they change their government by other means. Remember that voting is really just revolution by other means.
You know,
it's kind of like the diplomatic quote.
Yeah, but actually, I prefer the other quote that you use at the end of your show.
Oh, if your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't try so hard to suppress it.
I love that. I think that is much more biting than that philosophy that you just gave there.
Well, it's a less extreme and yet still very.
It is something people can touch.
Yes,
a lot of people can't touch revolution. We both want revolution, but
peaceful.
Violent
revolution is rarely a good idea.
At KPFT, the only thing that happens is peacefulness. So,
okay, yes.
So that goal, that's implicit.
Peaceful revolution. Occupy is
absolutely.
Peaceful
it's implicit.
Revolution.
Yes.
Speaking of Occupy, you know that chair actually sounds like a mosquito every time you turn.
Well, I'm wondering, Roxy, do you hear the chair when I squeak? Well, then if Roxy doesn't hear it...
I just have the ears of a dog, I
Yes,
guess.
I think so. So if Roxy doesn't hear it, it's okay.
Okay. You know, I mentioned on my show on Wednesday at 10, and that's why it's kind of great now to have Friday at 3, because probably these people never heard that. So yeah. I can really kind of get yeah. to do it over. I mentioned the fact that when you look at the Hong Kong protests going on right now, that they want to be able to choose not only their own governor, but choose the governors that they have an option to choose among, as
right.
opposed to governors chosen by Beijing, that then they can choose the Beijing-approved governor. And, you know, we've had this discussion in this country over the last few years, are corporations people, is money speech? And what I suddenly realized is the reason why money is speech, but people not so much.
That, well, you know, it's been like that for a long time, but make your point.
The point is that when someone donates $1 million, $1 million doesn't clutter up the sidewalk. It doesn't leave debris in the park. It doesn't slow people down from commuting to work. $1 million is just, in its way, it's sort of clean and neat. It goes into a bank account. It goes out and does its political work, dirty or otherwise. And it doesn't bother anybody. When 1 million people go out on the street, your intuition is that 1 million people should be much more influential than $1 million given by one person. 1 million people versus one person with $1 million. The problem is 1 million people leave trash,
mm-hmm.
block traffic,
must be fed,
obstruct sidewalks, must be fed, slow down or perhaps even close down businesses. So they have to be moved off the street. So you have 1 million people that are trying to convey an idea, an objection, a dissatisfaction, something they feel is not being responded to by the governmental institutions available to them. They're a nuisance. But $1 million, priceless.
Yeah, but it's a lot more sinister also, right? It's just it's $1 million. Simple, it's $1 million.
And it doesn't clutter
and
the streets.
And it doesn't clutter the streets.
Well,
but
clutters Wall Street, but they don't mind so much. All right, we have a caller.
Yes, a caller named Political Tish.
Scott. Let's
Scott.
Keep it simple.
Yeah,
Scott.
I think. Scott, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Scott.
I am trying to figure out why I do not see more people wearing political T-shirts. I wear them, and I've gotten a lot of compliments, especially for the Wendy Davis T-shirt and even the Letitia T-shirt. I just a few, about a week ago, I got my first compliment about a Stephen Kirkland T-shirt. You know, T-shirts are... they should be a much less expensive way to advertise a candidate. They indicate that they tell other people in Houston that you are interested in politics and you're supporting somebody.
You know, an advertising P&G.
I actually have a theory on that, Scott, and I've been thinking about this for quite a while because, believe it or not, I noticed that as well. People, I don't know if you remember back in the 70s, back in the 80s, people always had their politics on their T-shirts. It was something that was prevalent. But yeah. You know what? As we became polarized, people became scared of given exactly where they were. And if you are worried about telling people where you are, in other words, in Texas, I would have to wear a big liberal T-shirt on my back. I would be promoting that I'm a liberal, and folks don't know in this part of the world whether that's going to get you, shunned or whatever. So that's a great point. I tell you what, though, I started doing the opposite. I started wearing my political stuff because this is one big liberal that wants to advertise that I'm one big liberal. What do you say, Mike?
Well, you know, I'm going to be a little glib here, but I think that in Texas, being both an open and concealed carry state, I think if you're going to wear something with your political liberal propensity, it should be bulletproof.
Do we have bulletproof vests?
Wait, what are you saying, Scott?
I have not gotten any flack from anybody about my T-shirts. Instead, I get compliments.
You know, I tell you, Scott, not to cut you, but I really want to say this because I think what you're doing by wearing your T-shirt, right, give a lot of people permission to tell the people who they are. And
yeah.
I think for a long time in our city, in our towns, in our state, a lot of people have been scared of actually saying who they really were. or who they really are. And in doing so, I think that's one of the reasons we have bad politics, because folks are quiet.
You know, actually, Egberto, that makes a good point. I have actually spent most of my adult life in public interaction. I spent 20 years as a window covering installer. I've been in 8,000 homes. I've had at least that many political conversations. I've been in retail sales for about 16 years. So I've had a lot of chances to talk to people. And I'll tell you, to your point, I think that because Republicans and conservatives are so good at messaging,
right,
that they have convinced people that Texas is a conservative state, and if you're a liberal, you better shut up, because you know what? It's 10 to 1 against you. And that is not the case.
Exactly.
When you get people in private conversations, when you broach to them that you are not a conservative, it's amazing how many non-conservatives will admit that they are not conservative. And they will often admit, well, you know, maybe I'm a fiscal conservative, but I'm a social liberal, which still makes you sort of a blue dog Democrat.
And they find out they have more in common with you than they thought. And
yes,
suddenly liberal doesn't have the sting that a lot of people thought it had. Is there something else you want to say, Scott?
Well, you know, Obama won 5 of the 6 most populous counties in Texas.
That's so true. Bexar County, Harris County.
He lost Tarrant County, but he just barely won Harris County. That's both times he,
yes,
won Dallas County in upper 50s. Would you believe that back? I would not have believed that back in 1966 when I lived in Denton and read the Dallas Morning News and got tired of it. And, of course, in 1963, Dallas had a very bad reputation for right-wing politics.
Right.
What a change, I guess, huh? Surrounding counties still have a lot of right-wing Republicans, but Dallas County itself is a pretty typical urban county.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. I want to make one more point. We had this record turnout or near record turnout in 2008 to elect Obama. I'm talking nationwide,
right,
now. And then in 2010, liberals, Democrats got lazy and they didn't turn out to vote. And it was a census year. And I knew that that was going to be a disaster. And sure enough, because they only did half the job in 2008, and then the Democrats stayed home.
You
so
know, I vote in every
that is
election.
exactly why we are in the boat we are in today. Yeah. Where not only do we have a Republican House, but a gerrymandered Republican,
right,
House, and
to
we're going
to
live with that until at least 2020.
Yes,
they,
yeah,
could have known that that 2008 was getting very close to a census.
Right.
There would be redistricting.
People didn't care.
But they didn't think about that.
No, people didn't care.
And you know what? I tell you, sir, one thing it's true is that they didn't advertise it. I think had they advertised that 2010 had a 10-year consequence, many more folks would have gone out to vote. But, sir, look, thank you for calling. Unless you have something else quickly you want to tell us.
Well, you know why I vote in every election?
Why is that?
I don't need a reason.
Thank you. Hey, I love you.
I love you, guy.
You're a great guy,
great,
man.
I got that line from a bartender, and I see what he would tell unruly customers that he was cutting off.
There you go, Scott. You're a good man. Thank you very
much
for calling, my friend.
Okay, I'm going to give out the phone number again. We do have some open lines, 713-526-5738. Earl, you're going to be up next, but because we're going to do our break now for traffic and weather, I don't want to start you on a conversation quite yet. We'll just be a minute. You're listening to Partisan Gridlock on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston 89.5 FM, Galveston, and Roxanne to you.
All right, gentlemen, there is some traffic out there on the roads, so let's get it started. If you are traveling on the North Freeway, traveling outbound at Allen Parkway, there is an accident causing traffic speeds to slow down to about 20 miles an hour. If you are traveling on the Southwest Freeway, traveling inbound at Chimney Rock Road, there is an accident causing traffic speeds to slow down to about 30 miles an hour. Now for a look at our weather, it is 89 degrees outside. Nice, and there's some scattered clouds. Now those scattered clouds will form together for some thunderstorms tonight, and that actually, unfortunately, passes throughout the rest of our day and into our Saturday. However, the temperatures will be dropping to the mid-80s, so there's something to look forward to. Now, back to you, gentlemen, out of Partisan Gridlock.
And we are back. Well, I just want to say scattered clouds. I got to thinking about the scattered clouds, that scattered clouds are a little like the Occupy movement. As soon as they get together to accomplish anything, everybody wants them to go away.
Why did I know you were going to do something with scattered clouds, Mike?
I think you had this prescient sort of vibe from me.
Yeah, you know, I'm like, anyhow, George, Earl, George.
Earl.
Oh, it's Earl.
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 Earl wants to talk about George P.
Earl, what you
God
want to talk
help
about?
Us Bush.
Please tell me what you want to talk about, but you scare me by those words.
George P. Bush is running for land commissioner.
Yes, he is.
And I mean, you know what the P stands for. President!
You are actually so right about that. It's a stepping stone. That's what you believe as well, don't you?
Yeah, he was quoted in a newspaper that he thought that the beach erosion was caused by global climate change, and then Breitbart, Texas, the right wing website,
yeah, I know
he was
him.
Misquoted when in fact he wasn't. He never complained that he was misquoted, so he wants to have it both ways.
That sounds typical, but you know something. What is he going to tell Uncle?
So he's a Romney Bush.
Yeah, but the question
he wants to have it both ways.
I stop it, Mike. Anyway. Anyhow,
is there a variety of Bush called a Romney? There should be a Romney Bush.
No, we're
this, they can't decide you know, there, whether it's green or red.
There is something called Bushisms. I am going to say there's now something called Mikeisms. All right, let's going back to you, my dear friend.
Well,
Earl.
Well, it's the curse of the Bush family. You know, the Bush dynasty. I mean, you would think that George had ruined it for everybody. I mean, I've been watching Jeb, seeing if he's going to pop his head.
Well,
up.
It looks like the brother has started making waves for him to run. He said that he wants to run.
Yeah, I'm watching Jeb's hole, and here's George P. sneaking up behind me with a Bowie knife. You know, what's going on with
but,
that?
But,
no, I've
you
got
know,
two Bushes to watch. This is not fair.
I think that it's kind of a Republican plot. Have you noticed over the last 50, 60 years that every Republican that becomes president starts to look more liberal compared to the Republican president that follows him? Only today would Richard Nixon look like a liberal Republican.
Yeah, well,
even Reagan starts to look like a liberal
well,
Republican
put it this way,
compared to what followed.
The truth of the matter is, in a lot of ways, and people are going to hate that I say this, but a lot of ways Reagan was more liberal than President Obama. Some people are going to say, oh, blasphemy. But I can actually start enumerating a few things and say, hey, wait a minute, he was for this now.
Well, you know, Rachel Maddow has called Bill Clinton the best moderate Republican president
we've
ever had.
Think about it. Just look at the deregulation under Bill Clinton. Look at what he'd done with the Glass-Steagall. Look at we can enumerate all these items that Bill Clinton passed that President Obama never attempted to repeal that makes that true. And the reason why it's not that these guys are bad liberals or anything of that sort, the real reason is that money in politics, something that folks at Move to Amend and other organizations are trying to fix, controls the presidency. I've written several times that says, you know, the president isn't really as presidential as
he used to be. He's not the king. Isn't the king.
He used to be. I mean, think about Roosevelt back in 1939.
But Roosevelt had a Democratic Congress.
Yes, but he also had... He was also very forceful in getting the things that he wanted through.
Yes.
You know, Obama had a Democratic Congress.
For the first 2 years.
For the first 2 years and a
bulletproof. And didn't use it.
I won't say he didn't.
It seems like.
I don't say he didn't use it. He was not allowed to use it because the pressure of money and politics controlled everything then as it does now. So the president, I mean, the difference in parties is substantive. However, it's not as huge as people may think, but we have callers, so anything else you want to say, Earl?
I think George P. Bush says
yeah, nip it in the bud.
All right, nip it
in the bud.
I like that one, Earl. That's a good one. So let's go to the other caller.
Nip the Bush in the bud.
Stop
it. I love it. I love it. An agricultural joke.
Hey,
land commissioner, buds.
Stop that. Let's go to Johnny.
Johnny, you're actually finally on the air.
Ugly image you're planted in my brain.
Oh my God! You know, let me tell you, Johnny. I tried to keep Mike calm so that he wouldn't put that image in your mind. But you know, it's, knowing Mike, it's hard to do. Okay.
It's too late for that.
I know.
Listen, I didn't call to make a comment about Obama.
Talk to me.
But you all brought it up about, well, Scott did anyway. He talked about how well he did in different counties in Texas.
Right.
But I'm thinking, how well would he have done if he was an angry, quote, angry black man like Chris Rock? You know, America's not ready for a real angry black man.
He wouldn't have been elected, but he could have done
stand-up. Repos at every turn. Obama was accepted because he came across as too white. So the crazy white folk wouldn't feel too bad about voting for him. They already knew from the get-go that he was too soft and wishy.
You know something?
Remember what he said when he was candidate Obama? Oh, it was one of the first things he said to a reporter in response to the question about universal health care. Oh, that's too political.
Well,
give me a break. Everything's political.
Well,
no matter what you do in this life, whatever profession you take, there's politics everywhere.
Johnny,
you can't escape politics.
Johnny, two things hurts. Let's first talk about the health care thing. Do remember that before... back in 2007, 2008, he was preaching single payer. It is afterwards that it came out that he realized that it couldn't get done and he had to change his stance on that. But hold on, Mike. But before that, with regards to Obama being the white black guy, the only person that could get through, that is an absolute truity. Okay, there is no person.
Truity?
I just created that word. Okay, so let truism. Truism.
I like
thank
truity.
You.
Truism.
But I kind of like truity. I created that word out of thin air. But anyway, here's the deal. As a Obama had to play that role. I don't know if you remember what was the name of the first black baseball guy.
Jackie Robinson.
Jackie Robbins. When Jackie Robbins came out,
Robinson.
He had to.
I know. That.
I know Robinson. Come on. Anyway, he had to play a particular role in the way he came across to white America. That was a necessity for making that transition. That's why he was chosen and not other black players that were much better than he was, okay? Because he had self-control that others didn't. The same can be said for President Obama. President Obama knew how to play the role as the first person to bring acceptance of this black dude into the presidency of America. Hard to accept for a lot of people, but that is the fact. Mike, you wanted to say something.
I understand what you're talking about. I agree with that. I'm just making a statement that if Obama was different from the get-go, it wouldn't be so out of character him for him to challenge repos right now.
Well, I can see that. I can see that.
I want to make a couple of comments. First of all, I have commented on my show. I'm sorry, I'm kind of stuttering here. I kind of commented on my show once. We did a show on racism versus culture, let's say culture phobia, if you want to coin a phrase. And I think that what we're talking about here is, do you want to vote for someone culturally recognizable to you or someone culturally alien to you, regardless of their skin color? If a white guy came up dressed as a punk rocker, you would not think that he was safe to hang around so much with. So I don't think skin color is always the determining factor. That's number one. Number two, when you look at the first 2 years of Obama's term, I think that we need to remember that Rahm Emanuel was his chief of staff. And Rahm Emanuel was rumored to have a lot of influence over the fights he tackled versus the fights he passed on. And I think that a lot of Democrats who are unhappy with Obama's first 2 years really should be looking at Rahm Emanuel as the guy who helped to decide what was politically doable and what was not. And then the third thing I want to mention just briefly, I'm getting to a point where I'm really annoyed at calling Obama the first black president. Because in
fact... Oh, yeah, Bill Clinton is the first black president.
No,
don't you all know that?
Well...
I know where you were going with that. Go ahead, Mike.
My thing is, in fact, and more importantly, he is not the first black president. He is the first mixed-race president.
No, he's the first latte president. You just said stepping stones.
Well, the point is that if there has ever been a person who is literally mixed race in political office, it's certainly Obama. And the fact that he has been called a black president, not a white president, not a mixed race president, which would be the more accurate and perhaps more significant way of terming him, that's starting to bug me because I think that it's an important recognition.
I have to get on your case for that. That should definitely not bug you because the fact of the matter is, you're sitting down here. I'm a black man, but you guess what? There's a whole lot of other stuff that is running
all
through me.
All of us are mixed race.
And that's my point. So the thing, Obama is characteristically black. I'm not saying he's not, you know, I'm saying.
But as a mixed race president, yeah. He's even more symbolic because we are turning more and more into a mixed race country. My wife is Chinese.
No, I understand that. But what I'm trying to say with regards to the president is that he is a character. Black isn't the race per se as for homogeneity. We're talking about how he's characterized in America. If he's stopped by the police, Obama is a black man.
He's an important symbol as a black president, but he is at least an equally important symbol as a mixed race president.
Well, hey guys,
yes. Sir.
Before I hang up, the reason I really called was y'all alluded at the top of the show to how people are frustrated to the point of being forced into a violent means of change because they're being denied a vote and they're being stifled in every other way, like what's going on right now. My question was, thinking back to FDR's day, supposedly, reportedly, the percentage of industrialists back then who were agreeable to funding the New Deal was about 50-50. About half of the industrialists were like that. But I'm thinking that we have way less than half right now who are willing to do that, and that's why we're seeing such resistance against people like Occupy. You see the police doing life-threatening and long-term threatening injuries to people.
Johnny,
that wouldn't happen if we had at least half of the industrialists who are pro-liberal.
Johnny, you're right. You're right, and it's because I take that right back to our business schools and otherwise where they've taught the mighty religion of pure capitalism, pure greed, pure unfettered laissez-faire capitalism.
Law without ethics.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for giving us a call, Johnny.
Before we leave, is learn your hunting skills and take up karate because you might need it.
Thank you, Johnny. You're a great guy.
Take care, Johnny.
Okay, Mike's coming up. Mike, how you doing, buddy?
Hi there. Am I on?
Yes, you're on, sir.
Hey, thank you. Whenever someone on the radio mentions in one sentence the word,
can you get a little closer to the phone, maybe?
Okay.
Better.
Sorry. Whenever someone on the radio mentions in one sentence the four words speech, money, corporations, and personhood, as you did at the start of my ears pick up. So.
Oh, this is Mike. I know you. How you doing, Mike?
Good. So I wanted to let all your listeners know that I'm with Move to Amend, and we have a meeting coming up this Tuesday evening at 7 p.m., at the Midtown Cafe and Bar on West Gray Street. And we have a great guest coming in to talk to us, Ahmed Al-Aswad, who is the outreach coordinator of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE, in Texas.
I think he's also at the Syrian American Council, isn't he?
He could be several times. Okay. I actually met him at KPFT because he was a volunteer at the last pledge drive.
I think I interviewed him once.
You met? Yeah. He had a rally not too long ago.
With a young lady, yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, Ahmad will be our speaker on Tuesday night at 7 p.m., and he will speak about CARE, his organization in general, the Islamic community in Houston, its origins and growth, and the relationship between Islam and democracy in America and the world. So to me, this is a very exciting program here that we will have a chance to.
Absolutely. Mike, why don't you tell us, since you're here, give us 15, 20 seconds worth of what is Move to Amend.
Okay, Move to Amend is a national organization that has collected over 300,000 signatures, and over 500 municipalities have supported their program to adopt and pass a new constitutional amendment stating that money is not speech, that you can't buy elections, and that corporations are not people. Under the in the last 100 or so years, the Supreme Court has been giving corporations constitutional rights and calling them people, that they have the same rights as you and I do. And I don't think that's right.
Yeah.
Corporations are fictitious entities. They shouldn't have the rights of people. They shouldn't be allowed to dominate.
Right, the Bill of Rights should have nothing to do with them. Absolutely.
Correct.
Now, one other thing, and folks, you may want to take a look, go to YouTube and look for Legalized Democracy, which pretty much explains everything that Mike says and gives it a little bit more context as well. Right, Mike?
Right, right. Yeah, and Move to Amend. I urge all the listeners to, if they haven't signed up with Move to Amend, go to their website and sign their card to
petition.
Thank you, Mike. You're a good man. Anything else you want to add to that before we go?
We don't have time to add anything before we go. We've got callers
really.
And a break coming up.
I'm all talked out. So
okay.
Thank you very much.
Look, thank you very much for calling in, Mike.
Thank you so much for calling. Okay, you're listening to Partisan Gridlock with two people that aren't Jeff Berg. I'm Mike Koenig. I have Thinkwing Radio on Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. This year is Egberto Willis. He's got Politics Done Right Mondays at 9 p.m. It takes two of us to replace Jeff. And now we're going to do traffic and weather.
All right. It is pretty nasty out there on our Friday afternoon. However, if you are traveling on the Southwest Freeway, traveling inbound at Chimney Rock Road, there's an accident causing traffic speeds to slow down to about 15 miles an hour. Now, if you're traveling on 290, traveling outbound, there is some congestion causing traffic speeds to slow down to 25 miles an hour. And finally, if you are traveling on, you know it, the West Loop, the North Loop traveling west, or the West Loop traveling north, there is some congestion causing traffic speeds to range from 40 miles an hour all the way down to about 25. Now for a look at weather, there's some scattered clouds out there, and the temperature today is 89 degrees. Now there's a chance of thunderstorms throughout the rest of our day and into our evening, and unfortunately that continues into Saturday. However, those temperatures are dropping due to the fall, so we're going to be in the mid-80s this weekend. Now back to you, gentlemen, together that make the replacement of Jeff Berg.
Yes. Yeah, well, you know, Roxy, we haven't had a chance to let you weigh in on something. You know, I like to
you
hear
you want to weigh in on anything.
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal. Jeff Berg goes mostly off caller's commentary, and Egberto goes off the blog of the week. So Jeff has many topics while Egberto has one topic, and it's hard for me to jump in.
Are you
in
saying
sometimes.
That he's an Egberto OneNote?
No. No, but what I'm saying is I have to answer all these calls over here too. I've got a lot of things to do.
Okay. All right.
Here.
Get back to work.
So yes, let me get back to work.
Okay. Now
I want to point out that the scattered clouds are now occupying the sky, and I'm sure that there's going to be the sun police that's going to come in and disperse them.
And that was the Mike-ism of the hour.
Yeah.
Now we'll get to Max. How you doing, Max?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Talk to me.
And I told the young lady who answered the phone that I was going to talk about politics. When the truth probably is religion.
Oh.
Okay, cut off that call, Roxy.
No, come on. No. Ignore Mike. Let me hear your religion, my dear friend.
We can really talk religion because I'm sort of an atheist, agnostic, drifting.
And I'm a humanist.
And he's a humanist, so you got the right guys.
Okay. I was putting up Wendy Davis signs in my yard, and I picked up only the placards. They didn't have anything to put them on, so I taped them to the usual wire signs, of which I have many, and put them up, and went across the catty corner across the street and put one up in Edgar's yard, and then I was going to, Don pulled in next door to me, and I said, I'll go check, see what the chances are of putting one up, and he said he was leaning toward Greg.
Oh.
And the disparaging remark he had about Wendy is she saw an opportunity to get the liberal, to become the torchbearer for the liberals in her Senate.
As opposed to Greg Abbott deciding he wanted to be the torchbearer for the conservative group, which of course is much more respectable.
Yeah, correct. And therefore he couldn't tolerate that kind of opportunism.
Wait, so let me ask you this, caller, Max. Are you saying that some religious person told you that or just your neighbor?
Religious neighbor.
Oh.
So okay. Basically, Abbott is godly, and Wendy Davis, by implication, is godless, and therefore, because she's liberal, she's godless, or because she's godless, she's liberal. It's hard to tell chicken and egg here.
Yeah, and pro-abortion.
Well,
pro-choice. Which is a different thing. I correct people. Right to life is really just anti-choice, and pro-abortion is really just pro-choice.
And Mike is absolutely right about that. It takes the correct narrative, and we have to start it. And that's the liberals' fault. That's our fault for not having placed the appropriate narrative on these different issues. But let me tell you something that I would love for you to tell your neighbor, my friend. If Jesus were walking, and I'm not a Jesus man, but if Jesus were walking this earth, okay, he would be a liberal. But most importantly, he would have accepted the expansion to Medicare because it would have helped 1 million Texans. He would have ensured that the kids that are going to school had the monies to go to school so that they could afford to live in the future. So there's a whole narrative you can present to them. The thing about liberals, whenever approached by folks like that, is we simply listen. We no longer should be listening. We should be going on the attack. Max, any other thing you'd like to say?
Amen, brother. And there is
two items.
It's hard for me to tell if they are urban legend or not. One item is the huge cross put up on the Beltway and I-45 South.
It's private property.
Mm-hmm. By the Sagemont Baptist Church. There is apparently a woman who is a member of the church and rides the Fuquay Park and Ride bus, has told a fellow passenger that they plan to put apartments in that cross for homeless people.
Well, private property.
Another source puts the rumor to the Sagemont Baptist Church Men's Club that meets at Kroger's early in the morning. They meet in Kroger's kind of a conference room and have breakfast. And the same rumor has apparently come from that source that they plan at some point to put apartments to house homeless people in that cross. They're spending a lot of money lighting up that cross every night.
Yes. Well, look, let me tell you, we don't really have answers for those, my friend. But I tell you what, I love when you say things like what's the word that he used?
Urban legend.
Whether it's an urban legend or it just could be. But Max, we have our calls are lighting up that we have to go.
Okay,
I really appreciate your call and keep calling, keep listening.
One more.
Quickly.
Real quickly. Have you heard that all the airlines are going to make sure that there is at least one non-Christian?
It's a joke. Somebody called up and said that last week. Don't believe it.
You'll have to tell me about that later. I've heard of it.
It might have been me.
Yeah, okay.
In case of
Max, you're a bad man. We'll talk to you later. Thank you for calling. Keep listening. Keep calling. And remember, our fun drive is next week, so we'll be waiting for you. Next caller is going to be...
Rand.
Rand, talk to me.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
Doing good. First off, I'd like to say that, you know, I'm a massive Obama supporter.
Good.
And, you know, I think the guy is great. But, you know, when you guys were discussing earlier, you know, his first 2 years, what I think a lot of people forget about is that it was really the Congress that let him down. He went in there, guns blazing, trying to do...
I think you got to turn down the radio.
Sorry. Somebody distracted me. You know, they let him down. They were letting the Republicans run all over him with that, you know, birth certificate, hanging out with Muslim stuff, and they weren't, you know, like supporting him in Congress. And so, you know, I think that's something, and that's the reason I think that, you know, we lost in 2010 was because, you know, the Democratic Congress was just terrible.
Look,
I
want to jump in here. This is important, Rand. First of all, you are absolutely correct about how Democrats.
I disagree, but go ahead.
But yeah, that's fine. We always do that.
I just want to say.
Let me tell you. First of all, the Democrats have never been a cohesive unit. Okay,
yes,
and because
exactly.
Democrats have never been a cohesive unit, they cannot have the impact that lockstep, step barrel type Republicans have. So that would never be the case. Secondly, you're correct that most of healthcare reform and all these other things, Obama provided a framework and these are, and left it to these guys to write it. But let me give one important thing, and this is going to be something that you like. The only president after 100 years that was able to get any form of universal health care is
exactly.
this president.
That's
so
true.
In saying that, you have to say that the procedure, the methodology used by President Obama is the only one that was or has been successful. So you have to temper your critiques when you're having critiques against the man. But Mike wants to come in, so let me...
I want to say, just to expand on that, that I think that medical insurance, national medical insurance, was first proposed by Theodore Roosevelt.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
So over 100 years.
I mean, Bill Clinton, you know, I mean, it almost lost him his
right.
presidency.
Right. Eisenhower,
you know,
Truman, they've all proposed it. Now, I also want to point out, though, that technically speaking, when a person is elected president, they become the titular head of their party.
Uh-huh.
So when you talk about how Congress didn't support the president, at the time, Congress, a lot of people in Congress were complaining that the president wasn't providing leadership for them. Why didn't he come out with a plan for health care insurance instead of letting the Congress kind of mess its way around it for a year and a half before he finally took a position on it? So I think that while I don't totally...
I think he was, I think that he was trying to, you know...
He was trying to be a consensus president,
which, you know, he leaves it up to Congress in order
and
to,
it worked.
To work out, you know, all the details.
And
but, you know, he didn't realize that the Congress, the Democratic Congress was
cats.
Not
right.
going to, you know,
but
stand behind him 100%.
But it worked. What he did, like we said, if you're looking for results as a matter of to prove success, what he did actually worked. So
yeah.
therefore, we
He's
have
awesome.
To say that
I mean,
we have something.
Know, like it,
yeah.
People don't realize all the small little things that he's done over the course of his presidency.
Absolutely.
That's true.
But look, John, I want to get in another call. So
yeah, sure.
Before we go to break. So let's see. That is going to be
John.
John.
Now, here's what I'm going to say. We have about 18 minutes to go, and we have four callers on the line, and I'm going to try to give everybody a chance. So we're going to try to move it along a little bit more now. John, how are you doing today? You're on the air.
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
Okay,
all right.
Thank you.
The truth is, on a democratic, a truly democratic voting system or political system, it shrinks down to mob rule. I mean, would you disagree with that? At its heart, that is really what one person, one
well,
vote.
That was a genius of the Constitution, right? What you said is absolutely correct. So what did the Constitution do? The Constitution created a Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights says, irrespective of majority, minority, or anything, we have these inalienable rights, and these inalienable rights are things that the majority cannot get rid of. So therefore, you're correct in that regards, but anything thereafter should really be what? Democracy rule.
Well, if I'm understanding what you said correctly, you're saying that democracy is really mob rule. Is that what I understood?
Well, and I'm sorry, that is a...
I know, we understand what you mean.
Well, no, I think it's an important distinction. And I realize you may not have meant it that way, but the fact is that people who are anti-democratic always term it that way.
Right, but again, how we elect our president, how we elect the Congress, was not set up that way. You know, we were initially set up to be a bunch of aligned states, where if you didn't like what was going on in one state, you go to another one that has rules that you do like.
Well, the Federalist Papers, if you read Federalist Paper number 10, I believe, I think that's the one that I went to a class, and you see that is one of the things that I don't remember who was the author of the paper wrote, but that is one of the things that he wanted to, I think he called them factions. He wanted to prevent factions in our body politics, and that was one of the rationales that they were going to use to pass, you know, to get
they
the
were
constitution
against political parties,
to get the constitution effected. So there's a lot to that. Now I understand what you meant by mob rule. In other words, let's use as an example. Let's say that most of Americans were skinny, and the rest of us were all fat.
I'm a fat American.
And all of us fat people, because we're a majority, decided to force feed skinny people. Mob rule? Hey, yes. But I mean, no. Inalienable rights is what our Constitution provides in the Bill of Rights. So that is how we mitigate that. Anything else you want to add, my friend?
Well, no, but I would just like to say, in light of that conversation, I mean, to me, it has always seemed between Republican and Democrat that Democrats love mob rule. I mean, literally, I mean, look at...
Popular rule is a term I would prefer to use.
It was passed with no Republicans whatsoever. I think that's what really hurt for 2010.
No. Look, that is a disingenuous, and not you on your part, but that's a disingenuous statement on their part, because the reality is, if they were genuine, they would realize that the particular law that got passed was a law sanctioned by the Heritage Foundation. If it's sanctioned by the Heritage Foundation, it means it's not one of those crazy liberal, I'm just saying crazy in reality, it's not the socialized medicine that I wanted. So therefore,
but you're assuming that people give, that everybody who's not a Democrat gives credence to the Heritage Foundation just because of that name.
All right, let me.
I don't give anybody authority to my way of thinking.
I understand that. That's fine. Go ahead, Mike.
We need to take a break in a moment, sure. Just a quick station ID and stuff. But I want to point out that if you want to see what modern conservatives think is a well-run state, look at Michigan. And Michigan, in many ways, in my opinion, is probably the closest thing to a fascist government that we have in this country right now.
Yes.
Where they disenfranchise people. You want to call it mob rule? You want to call it popular rule? Michigan is the closest thing we have to a fascist state. Use that as the current Republican model. No, she's given me the eye, but not the music. But we do have to go to a station ID. Thank you so much for calling, John. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston. This is Partisan Gridlock without Jeff Berg. I'm Mike Koenig. This is Egberto Willis. Now it's time for traffic and weather with Roxanne.
All right. I hate to report that there's congestion all over the road today. So if you are traveling on the Southwest Freeway inbound or outbound within the 610 loop, you are stuck somewhere, causing traffic, which the traffic speeds are ranging from 20 miles an hour all the way to 40. If you're traveling on the Katy Freeway inbound or outbound within the 610 loop, there is congestion causing traffic speeds to range from 20 miles an hour all the way to 40. And finally, if you are traveling on the Southwest Freeway, traveling inbound at Chimney Rock Road, there is an accident causing the congestion on the 59 on the Southwest Freeway. Now for a look at weather, it is 89 degrees outside with some scattered clouds out there. Now, unfortunately, there's going to be some thunderstorms throughout the rest of our day and into our night. And that chance of thunderstorms continues into our Saturday. However, our temperatures are dropping, and our temperatures are going to be within the mid-80s. So back to you, Mike and Egberto, in the studio.
Here. Okay, I'm just going to finish my thought to Egberto. We're talking air conditioning now because, you know, air conditioning is very political. It's hot, it's cold. Your air conditioning evaporator coil has two drains. It has one in the coil itself, and then the pan underneath it is a backup drain.
I didn't know that.
That pan should always be dry. If that pan has any water in it, that means you've already got a problem in your coil.
That's what they're coming for tomorrow. But you know what, Mike?
I'm going to say one more thing.
Talk to me.
When they come, have them install a water sensor so that you know before it overflows that it's filling.
Yeah, we could
water.
Have lost
it's only
our
about
ceiling.
$60.
All right.
Okay, back to politics. Boy, what a mixture. Air conditioning and politics.
Okay.
Gary, you're on. How are you doing today? You never know where you're going to find me, do you?
I know. I was looking for Jeff. Listen, you made a comment about pro-choice versus pro-life. And the way I address this to people is, you know, I'm not in favor of abortion. But I am very strong on animal rights. I'm basically a misanthrope. Humans all disappear tomorrow, we'd be happy. But
we'd be disappeared.
The way I explain this to people that I know that may be more conservative, I ask them, are you a hunter? Oh, yes, we go dove hunting every September, and we go deer hunting every December, and we go... I said, okay, well, you know, if... I am opposed to killing an innocent animal when you can go down to the supermarket and buy all the meat you want. But if I was the king of the world, I would not take away your right to hunt because it's been happening for thousands of years. Who am I to tell you? So likewise, you can use that approach when you discuss abortion. Say, well, I'm opposed to abortion, but who am I to tell you?
And essentially anti-abortion, pro-choice.
The Monitor the other day, I had a fellow who wrote a book about Islam, and I had a revelation. He was talking about how Islam is misinterpreted by the Islamic people and that they take Muhammad's words out of context. And he was speaking to people in the 7th century and the problems they had at that point in time. And Jesus was speaking to people in what we call century zero and the problems they had at that time. So I realized that all religions are basically frozen in time. This is the wisdom imparted, and then it's
Gary
goes on. No, wait, I'm almost finished.
Okay.
It goes on and on and on. Well, this is true for politics, and I realized conservatives want things to be like they were in 1938. They don't want to have, you know, black people, you know, having rights. And they don't want women to get out of the kitchen and not be barefoot. And I finally realized that politics and religion are very similar. People get comfortable in their particular lifestyle or their approach, and they hate change. So they don't want the change.
Good.
Now, one last thing, and I'll hang up. In the Chronicle today, they had their list of their support, who they support for state representative. And at the end of the editorial, they had 10 names that said these people have no contestants except for third parties. Okay, well, Republicans, Democrats, you know, what would you say, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, Dumb and Dumber. And then the third party is the answer to our problems. And then they didn't even mention a single third party. They said, these people have no contestants except for third party. You can look at that in the Chronicle today. And that's all I have to say. Goodbye.
Gary, look, you had a very smart statement with regards to the conservative dilemma. Thank you very much. But we have to move on now to James. Talk to me, James.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You have a great show. I can listen to you guys anytime.
Thank you, sir.
I hope to have you hear y'all back on again.
Thank you.
Wait, we have to plug our show now that you like us. On Mondays at 9 p.m., I have a show called Politics Done Right. Please give me a call and call in. And Mike, tell them about your show.
Wednesdays at 10 p.m., I have Think Wing Radio with Egberto as my engineer and verbal sparring partner. So you can hear us other times. But we don't want to displace Jeff Berg. As good as we are, we like Jeff Berg.
Jeff Berg is, you know, it took two of us to replace Jeff now. But anyway, talk to me, James.
Well, we all need all the help we can get.
That's right.
So anyway, I'm going to be listening for you guys.
Thank you, sir.
Two things I want to ask you about is I'm a Democrat.
Right.
Okay? But I'm really leaning away from Democrat because Democrats, like you said earlier, are so incohesive as a party. I don't understand why they're like that. I mean, it's a lot that America could have gained even with Obama, but the Democrats are so incohesive until they're never together on one thing in one accord. So I'm really leaning toward away from them. They've gotten too comfortable with the majority votes.
I want to say something, James, because I hear that a whole lot, but I think there's something that we have to realize. More important than party right now are movements.
Okay?
And movements will drive parties. If you realize when we had the Occupy movement, it drove the Democratic Party into running away from the austerity that was being attempted, and we went back into supporting middle-class-centric policies. Absent Occupy, we would have had an austerity budget in Congress and several other issues wouldn't have been taken care of. So In the end, you always result in some party. However, what is most important for the population at large is to have movements. We must start having movements. We must do that. And you know what? We're doing it. There are groups like Move to Amend. There are many of all these other groups that are out there saying we are going to start making a difference in the body politic. So what you've said there is important. What you've said is something we have to go through. We have a couple of calls we have to get in before we close out. You want to say something?
Yeah, I just want to make one comment. I agree with you about the Democratic Party, but I think it also speaks to the fact that the Republicans, being much more disciplined, much more in lockstep, I think that that's not necessarily a good thing. They're great at messaging because they're all in lockstep. But do we really want a party where everybody has the same idea?
Right. I don't disagree with that at all,
Mike. The narrative that y'all put out there about
movements?
Pro-choice.
Pro-choice being, not the same as pro.
That idea that Republicans, they are so far pro-choice, but against pro, it's like Democrats aren't for childbirth.
Yeah, I know what you're trying. Yeah. I get what you're trying to say, and you're absolutely right, sir.
We
have
more
to get
calls
our narrative right, and that is what I think we're all working on. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much for calling. You can be anti-abortion and still be pro-choice.
Absolutely. Teresa, come on in.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I was calling in last week, and a man came on, and he was basically, if you listen to that show, if you listen to the stream on kpft.org, you can see basically he was saying that women are not of any value unless they have children. And I think that this is a very fundamentalist point of view. It's very patriarchal. I mean, women are just, they don't have any value unless they can produce babies. Yeah, so it's keeping them in the kitchen, keeping them barefoot and pregnant. And it was just appalling that this person was given so much time and no person with an ovary, you know, was allowed on the air to counter that. I just want to remind people, you know, that we women hold up half the sky, and, you know, we
Teresa.
Have people running and people that we ought to need to pay attention to these politicians and how they are voting in, you know, for legislative work that is opposed to the interests of the women in this state.
Absolutely. Teresa, we're at a hard break, and let me tell you one thing, however. Please make sure and keep calling us and put in that on air, because you're absolutely right.
Call earlier.
Yeah, we do need the women's...
I was on hold 30 minutes last week, and I was on hold about 15 minutes today.
Oh, I am...
And I was on my cell phone. I had to get off and come back on.
I am so sorry, Teresa. I am so sorry. We'll make sure that doesn't happen again, my dear.
Because I would love to tell the next story, which is about it. Well, I'm going to tell it anyway.
No, we got one more guy that I want to get on. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Tag, 10 seconds. We're not even going to comment. Just speak quick.
Yeah, the one caller said that they want to go back, the Republicans want to go back to the 30s. They don't want to go back to the 30s. They want to go back to the days of the Protestant movement, you know, coming to the United States. And if you look at a lot of their policies, it follows what the Puritans wanted way back then. So. That's my comment.
Thank you very much for the comment. Bring us home, Mike.
You've been listening to Partisan Gridlock without Jeff Berg. This is 90.1 FM Houston, and I guess the wrap-up would be... By the way, I'm Mike Honig. This is Egberto Willis. And remember, if your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't try so hard to suppress it. Vote, vote, vote. Have a great week.
Thank you, guys.
McNeil, former top 10 WTA tennis player.
I'm John Wilkerson, and I was Lori's coach.
You've been hearing Lori and John tell you about the KPFT Tennis Fun Fest. If you've been saying, I'll get around to it, now is the time. The event is tomorrow. This is a fantastic time to improve your game, to have fun, and to make a contribution to KPFT. All play will be doubles, but partners are not necessary. The fee is $75 for adults and $60 for kids 16 and under, but we won't turn anyone away. If you're on a fixed budget, give KPFT a call at 713-526-4000. 4000, and we'll work with you. There'll be music, food, and games in addition to the tennis at the Homer Ford Tennis Center in McGregor Park. KPFT Houston.
Meetings of Pacifica Foundation Radio's Board of Directors and all of its standing committees, including KPFT's local station board and community advisory board, are open to the public. KPFT board and committee meetings and community advisory board meetings are posted in the events calendar of KPFT's homepage at least 1 week in advance of the scheduled date and also announced on the air. In addition, all Pacifica Foundation radio meetings are posted at pacifica.org under calendar with links to audio streams carrying telephonic meetings and audio recordings of those meetings. If a meeting is closed to the public, a written explanation of the reason for closing will accompany the meeting's minutes available at pacifica.org under calendar. If you want to be notified of meetings personally, please submit your email address to meetings@kpft.org.